Radio, where real guys talk real sports. Allow me to introduce the illustrious three-man booth.
I want winners.
What's your name, boy?
Mark the Game Changer.
What's your name, boy?
D-Well.
Now, ladies and gentlemen.
T.O.T. Sports Ph.D.
The world famous.
Ray.
They are who we thought they were.
RSG, Renegade Radio. The floodgates is about to open. Everybody has an opinion.
A man must have a code.
We're taking RSG to the next level.
Hello? You play to win the game.
You could gripe about Mike's game, but I don't see shooting percentage being here.
I blame it on Nintendo.
It's provocative.
Excuse me, we don't make excuses. You know, we're not going to make any excuses.
You need to move more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. Can't wait. Can you dig it? Dig it.
Welcome. That's the new intro. As Kobe Bryant likes to say, you're welcome. All right. Welcome to the Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports, RSG, Renegade Radio, one-third of the illustrious three-man booth. Mark is the game changer, holding you down. In a moment, I'll introduce the rest of the three-man booth. But, you know, I want to let things marinate for a second. We got a new intro. You know, the team came together. We put that together. For the listeners out there, we're trying to step it up. Every week, as D-Will said in the intro, try to take RSG to the next level. So with that said, let me introduce the fellas. All right, we're going to go around the horn real quick. I got my man, D-Wills. Holler at the people.
Man, I'm sitting here like Kendrick Perkins, man. I'm speechless with that intro. I don't know what to say. I'm looking around at the stadium, and I'm just speechless. What just happened to me? I feel like I'm energized today, man. I'm ready to go. We got a hot show, man. Hey, let's get to it.
Yeah, the new intro feels like a new pair of kicks. You know, when you was a youngin', you get a new pair of shoes, and you just felt a little different about yourself. That's how we feel with that new intro. So, you know, it's real sinister. We try to get the brand in order, you know. Now, last but not least, the baseline baptizer, the finisher, as we like to call him around these parts. Phil T, Sports PhD. What it do, man?
Feeling good. Looking forward to the show. The intro also has me hyped up. And I'm waiting for Nick Saban to come out and give me the recruiting pitch.
The recruiting pitch.
He got your Alabama A gloves out. You got those
That's
hanging
right.
up. Got a little
right.
mock locker made up for you. Yeah, so I'll give you all out there a quick rundown of what we have in store for you tonight. We have an excellent show lined up, as we always do. So let's get into that real quick. To start out the show, for the funky editorial, we're going to get into the NFL Pro Bowl impressions, reactions, just general thoughts about the Pro Bowl, how it went down, how it could be better. Then we have a treat for you all. You know, we like to keep our fans, we like to introduce new and talented people to our fans. And we have a guest tonight, Tim Tarantine, is going to be joining us later tonight. He's going to talk some sports. He's also a well-known philanthropist in the Michigan area. He's going to call in, and he's going to spend some time with us tonight, and he's going to be on the show, and he's going to bring a whole lot of flavor and perspective. He's a part of that, like we talk about, that Wu-like collective that Wu-Tang like collective that we're building, as an RSG crew, he is extended fam, so we're gonna welcome him in tonight. We got a new little a little bit of a twist on the show. Again, with the idea of introducing our listeners to new and interesting things, we're gonna feature the music of a new artist out there. Each week, we're gonna pick an artist who you may or may not have heard of, but who's not kind of on the mainstream radar, and highlight some of their music. So this could be a place where you come to hear some new music. So we're going to have three interludes throughout, and we're going to play select songs by a particular artist. Tonight's artist is Def Jam recording artist Big Krit, K-R-I-T, which stands for King Remembered in Time. A young up-and-coming rapper and producer. Great album out called Return of Forever. If you're a person who grew up and you're a fan of De La Soul, Tribe Called Quest, Outkast, groups in that vein, this is a guy who is continuing that tradition, very introspective lyrics, nice beats, sample-based beats, very good MC, high quality. He's on Def Jam, so we're going to give you a taste of some of his music tonight. We're going to get into the five on the black-hand side. We're going to talk some NBA. Now, one thing that I've been noticing lately is that, at least here in Wisconsin, you know, we have the Milwaukee Bucks, but they don't get a lot of coverage down our way. In the Madison area, it's mostly about the Badgers. Madison is really a college town. Devon works here. I live here. It's a college town. It's a college environment, and that's what rules. This is probably one of the best places to come and get NBA talk for you listeners out there. If you want to hear some good, knowledgeable NBA talk, RSG is the place to be, hands down. So in five on the black-hand side, we're going to get into talking about the beginning of this NBA season. You know, we're going to get in and talk about a few things. Team USA, that's beginning to shape up. Some disappointing teams, some surprising players. We're going to get into all of that. Later on, we're also going to touch base, and we're going to go off the dome with our Super Bowl primer slash preview. We're going to get more into the Super Bowl, talk about some interesting storylines, you know, from Tom Coughlin to Eli to Wes Welker, whether or not he's coming back to the Gronk, whether he's going to play or not. We're going to get into all those things as well. Then to finish up the show, we have our Dogs of the Week. I got kind of a surprise one. You know, we're going to get into the Dogs of the Week. We're going to hit you with a couple dope lines. And then we're going to go into our 30-minute after-hour section. For those of you who are downloaders, check us out in the after-hour section. We're going to go 30 minutes tonight. We're going to talk about the Kobe System commercials. We'll get into that. And then we're going to talk about doing a preview, or top 20 songs in hip-hop history. So we're going to preview that for you tonight and give you a taste of what's to come with that. I know that's going to be real controversial. Hella provocative, you know, and that's what we like to do. We like to keep it nice and provocative, real crispy-like. We like to get the people going, all right? So let's go ahead and jump into it, fellas. We're going to kick it off with the Funky Editorial.
Fellas, the one thing we need to say, yes, shall we say it, y'all? Yes, Melvin, right. Jimmy, yes. Coleman, yes. Ryan, yes. Say it.
Yes.
Everybody want to get funky one more time.
All right, this is a segment we like to call the Funky Editorial, where the illustrious three-man booth, we pick a topic and we just kind of, you know, get into it for a little bit. You know, barbershop talk. We toss it around the horn, see who's got an opinion on it, and we just lay it out there for you. If you want to call in at any point, feel free to. This is a great segment to do that. The number is 1-347-989-0844. Again, that is 1-347-989-0844. Call in and feel free to get on with the Real Sports Guys. Now, for this week's topic, this past weekend, the NFL, which is unanimously, universally recognized and rarely disputed as the king, quote-unquote king, of sports in the United States. They had their all-star showcase, the Pro Bowl. Personally, as an event, I don't really get into the Pro Bowl. You know, I always describe, you know, when talking about sports, I always tell people basketball is like jazz, football is like classical music. Basketball, you can get five cats on a basketball court, and if they know how to play, you can see a high-level game. Football, not so much. It's a little bit more orchestrated, still a ton of beauty to it, still a ton to be appreciated, still very artistic, still very artful, but it is very structured. And when you don't adhere to that structure, it doesn't have the same effect. So that's why I've never really been a big fan. I don't believe you can take 22 guys and put them on the field and have a really enjoyable football game in a way that hardcore football heads enjoy football, where you're looking at the nuances of the game is not there. And that's really what you, I think, hardcore football heads enjoy. So I'm going to pass it around to the illustrious three-man booth, and we're going to talk about the Pro Bowl a little bit. Very high-scoring game, 59-41. Ton of points being put up. Not a whole lot of defense being played. A few shenanigans and antics. And they were allowed to tweet during the game, which is real interesting, that Goodell kind of, you know, loosened up his leash, so to speak, on the players and let them tweet during the game. So I'm going to pass it to my man G. Wills and get his perspective on the Pro Bowl.
Well, I mean, I don't watch the Pro Bowl on a regular basis. And part of it is the NFL has been slowly taking the energy. I mean, even though it's the most popular, it's the undisputed champ in terms of just popularity in sport, it's been managing the aggressiveness of the players. And I think they're getting to a tipping point. And when you take some of that away, when you get to an all-star environment like the Pro Bowl, it gets magnified in a way. I mean, you can't have someone, what is it, Brandon Marshall or something like that. I mean, what do you have, like four touchdowns, three touchdowns? I mean, almost as many as he had during the season. So there's no competitiveness. I mean, even though the winner gets $40,000, the loser gets $20,000, they haven't found a way to really make this something that I think is worth watching. They haven't figured out how to develop any kind of skill. So it is losing what I think are the critical things that an all-star event has and the draw it has that it needs to have to be interesting. I think the only thing that saves it or could save it, and they have to make a decision about this, is linking it more to the Super Bowl activity. Make the Super Bowl a two-week experience. Really just encourage people to be around and engage in that activity in that city for 2 weeks and work off of that because it becomes just part of a pregame to the Super Bowl. I think that's the only saving grace that the Pro Bowl has.
Now, you mentioned that the Pro Bowl may have kind of lost a little bit as far as entertainment value and what you want to see in an all-star game. And I don't think it ever really had it. You know, as a kid, I never really looked to the Pro Bowl as something that I wanted to watch. I wanted to see who made it, and after that, I was good.
I would say that you know, when Jerry Rice and some of those cats played, Dion and some of those cats played, I watched the Pro Bowl. Because you knew they going to have fun, but you know they got a competitive gene about them that, you know, something's going to go at it. And they did battle a little bit more. I mean, the Pro Bowl has never been an elite all-star. I mean, if you had to rank them, the Pro Bowl has never, in the time that I've been alive, that has been a vessel, has never been one of the top all-star events. So I agree with you that. But I think it had a more competitive – you didn't have – Revis just letting people score the way they did. I think there was a little bit, at a certain point, there was some competitiveness happening in the game. And so I think that part, in a bad event, that makes it even worse, I guess, when you lose the competitiveness.
Yes, I agree. It didn't seem very competitive. I didn't watch, but watching the highlights, I'm watching the pass rush, and it seemed like guys weren't even really trying to get to the quarterback. You know, I enjoy football, but I enjoy football as it should be played. And to me, that's straight away from any style of football I've ever seen played. And to me, that was unappealing to my eye. Even in 30-second chunks and highlights, it was really off-putting as a fan of the NFL. Do you think what happened at the Pro Bowl is good for the league, or do you think it hurts the league?
Well, I think it, I think it hurts the league in a sense that it, you asking people to fly from the mainland to Hawaii, and that you try to get people to make some type of investment in following that. And so I think you have to figure out how to make it. I don't think you need to make it. I mean, you have to make it somewhat a competitive game and get people. I know people are worried about injuries. Or you just have to figure out how you link it to this, the pageantry of the Super Bowl. So if it's linked to like the pageantry of the Super Bowl and pro football's on display, and you figure out some ways to do some skills things that are just part of this 2-week pageantry of the Super Bowl, then it doesn't require it to have to hold its water like other All-Star events in the same way. So I think the strategy that you might have to look at, I know people, Hawaii is symbolic, but I would say that the solution, the possible solution is linking it to the Super Bowl and just make it part of this kind of pageantry of leading up to the Super Bowl, and then it doesn't stand alone on its own. And so you play the Pro Bowl, first Super Bowl team arrives the day after. It's just part of this. You create a space where these all-stars who are there can have their media day. You just make that all about the development of the league over time. I think if you take that strategy, then it's about the Super Bowl, of which the Pro Bowl is kind of the lead-up, the warm-up to the Super Bowl. I think that's the best strategy they probably could come up with.
Do you think anything needs to be attached to this game, like the MLB does, home field advantage? I don't know what you could attach to it because the Super Bowl is played on a neutral site, but does something need to be attached to the Pro Bowl, some sort of competitive incentive for the players to really care? I wouldn't care if I'm a football player. Football is such a violent sport, and you put your body at risk every time you step on the field. And to do that for an exhibition, is really tough. It's really tough to make that mental jump.
And I think for the reasons you just raised, I think that football, because of the physical nature of it, in the sense that you escaped serious injury and you're trying to get to the off season. I think it can never be at the level of some of the other All-Star events. I mean, even hockey is a physical sport, but it's a good All-Star type of event. They get after it. They score goals. They get physical. But I think football players haven't figured – I don't think there's any incentive that you can put in place other than say we're gonna guarantee your last year your contract, something that might just get them out there fighting on each other, you know. I think that might be it. But I think that what you do is you just realize that you're not going to be competing at the level of those other All-Stars and make it just part of what you do have that's probably more competitive than any other sport is your Super Bowl is probably the most elite thing that's out there in sports other than the Final Four or NCAA tournament. So what you could do is how do you leverage the Pro Bowl with that and just become part of that experience? I think that's the only other solution.
Yeah, you know, I think it maybe it serves its purpose as a simple exhibition, and maybe you do want to. I tend to lean towards staying away from putting any arbitrary motivation outside of you're in an All-Star game and you're playing with the elite players in your league on an All-Star event. Because I feel like what baseball does is just dumb to me. But that's a personal opinion. I just think it doesn't make any sense. It's not helpful. I just don't agree with it. PhD, what are you thinking about the whole Pro Bowl? Did you watch the game?
And the Pro Bowl was tough to watch. It was tough to watch. It was, I'll say it one more time, very, very difficult to watch. it's pretty much like touch football, man. You know, it's... I was just talking to a friend yesterday, And baseball found itself in the same position a handful of years ago when they had that very embarrassing tie in Milwaukee. And now the baseball All-Star game is more meaningful, especially with home field advantage, you know, being determined in terms of the World Series teams, the league that wins the All-Star game. Football needs to figure out something else. I don't know if it was Devon or somebody else I was talking to. Maybe they look at doing something like what hockey does in terms of having a captain, two captains, and they pick their team, forget about this AFC, NFC thing. You know, just something to bring more excitement to the process.
Yeah, it leaves a lot. It leaves a lot to be desired. Thinking about other leagues that do the All-Star situation, the All-Star events well, where would you rank? How, if you had to put together a list on the fly, how would you rank the All-Star events in the Big Four sports, NHL, NFL, MLB, and NBA?
Well, I'll go with it. NBA is number one. I would say MLB number two. I would say NHL number three, and then NFL number four. In that, and I almost might argue I might push the NHL up a little bit more when I start looking. I look at some of the skills challenges they have. I don't think they get the all-star celebrity vibe at their events like I would say some of the other events in terms of getting celebrity, but nobody doesn't like the NBA. When you think about how they attract celebrities, when you think about the level of play, you think about the skills competition, when you think about the whole experience in terms of how people invest, it's like a family reunion, what they do with Hall of Famers. I mean, when you think about, you know, some of the retired athletes, I think baseball does a really good job with that as well, but I think when you put the whole package together, the NBA weekend, if you've ever been to an All-Star weekend, go to NBA weekend. It's the NBA All-Star weekend is nothing you ever, I mean, you will be blown away with how they do things.
Yeah, to me, I would rank it NBA 1, MLB 2. I think there's a lot of history and nostalgia with the MLB All-Star events, with the Home Run Derby. The game itself, I do think it's dumb to have any sort of actual ramifications on competitive play tied to an exhibition, so I don't like that part about it. But I do think for the most part the MLB does a really good job of creating an atmosphere, sharing the history of the game during its All-Star events. The NBA All-Star game is, you know, it's like Black Woodstock. For those of you that remember the event in the mid '90s, Freak Nick. I would liken the NBA All Star Weekend to something to like a stepchild, the Freak Nick. And then I would put the NHL at third, and the NFL would slide in at a fourth. I want to see who makes the team. I want the guys to get recognition. Even the Pro Bowl itself, to me, is a second tier. Recognition. Being an all-pro, to me, is even more prestigious, and that's the thing you really look for, I think, if you're an NFL player, is being an all-pro instead of necessarily making a Pro Bowl, because after injuries and after the Super Bowl teams, players have stepped out, you're looking at fourth, fifth-tier guys. The Pro Bowl just doesn't work for me, so I would have to put it fourth. PhD, where are you at with it?
Pretty much ditto. Everything that you all said, I would go in the
even
same
the Freak
exact
Nick comments,
order.
You good with those two?
I'm going to plead the fifth on that one. I'm going to plead the fifth.
You going to stay away from that.
That's right. That's right. You know, it's back when I was a young man. But, yeah, I would go in the same direction. I would go in the same direction that you guys are going, and for the same exact reasons.
All right. So if we could in one move improve the situation for the NFL and make the Pro Bowl worthwhile, worth watching. How do you trump up some interest in this game?
I like what Phil said about, and I think this might work. I thought about it because that does tap into the competitive instinct of football players. I would pick a captain and have them pick their team. That was just the nature of picking their team would create a buzz and create some friction. But it would create some energy, and I think it would create some competitiveness because now your name is on it. Put it on the players. So let Ray Lewis pick the AFC squad. And then Ray going to have, you know, and then put Urlacher on the other side. And then now they're competing. I think that would be an interesting dynamic to have. Or let, you know, three captains pick, you know, their squad. I think that would be an interesting dynamic to create some competitiveness.
Well, we'll have to send that in to Goodell and the crew. Let them get on that. Let the league office work that out. We're gonna have to revisit this Pro Bowl conversation because again, it's kind of a dud of an all-star event, especially the way it was played this year. It definitely could have been a lot better. Again, all I saw were highlights, and in the highlights, I was turned off. That's just me. I don't want to see guys letting guys catch 40, 50 yard touchdowns, which is what it seemed like. You know, I don't want to see guys doing barrel rolls before the snap of the ball. I want to see some football. I want to see some football with the best players in the league. But I also, at the same time, understand that that's very difficult to recreate what you see during a regular season with just a week's worth of preparation, with really no sense of scheme or, you know, philosophy of what you want to do and just go out there and run some plays and have a good time. So I think they should just name guys to the Pro Bowl, send people to Hawaii, pay for some family vacations, get a guy their checks for making it, everybody gets their bonuses, and it's a wrap. Maybe they just do interviews and have media time. You know, so yeah, we're going to wrap that up, the funky editorial.
Game changer, let me add one thing in. I was thinking about how you said it. The other thing you could do is maybe not have a game, but create team competitions. Do you remember how they used to do the whole all-star thing where they had all these folks who used to compete? They always used to end it with an obstacle. I mean, one thing maybe you get away is not having a game, but create competition between teams around whatever, skill, strength, or what. That might be another way to do it, where you know they're going to be competitive. So you put Green Bay against the Bears in competing on something, do a tournament around just whatever, some kind of skills competition that might get them playing. So that might be something to think about as well, that and then get away from the game altogether.
Yeah, absolutely. I really don't think they should play a game because the game is not fun. It's just not fun to watch. I think we're all in the same camp on that. So we'll let that one be. We're going to move on. I'm going to pass it to my man, PhD, and he's going to introduce our guest for this evening. So, PhD, if you will.
Absolutely. So tonight we have a very special treat. Along the lines of our previous featured guest this month, which includes Alan Sack, who wrote Conford Amateurs, as well as Damon A. Williams, who's the vice provost and really just an academic giant at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. We're excited to have Kalamazoo, Michigan's Tim Tarantine as our featured guest tonight. Tim is currently a vice president at Southwest Michigan's First, which is one of the premier economic development firms in the Midwest. Tim's entire professional career has been targeted on giving back to the community that has given him so much. Tim has spent time as an educator in the Kalamazoo Public School System, as well as a past member of leadership of Derek Jeter's Turn 2 Foundation. Most recently, Tim served as the executive director of Kalamazoo's Douglas Community Association, which is a staple of the southwestern Michigan community. Currently, Tim serves on several
charity boards, such as being the chair of Kalamazoo County's Ready Fours, which he'll talk about in a bit, as well as a member on the external advisory boards of the School of Communication and Family Life Education at Western Michigan University, which is the same place where he received his graduate degree in interpersonal, cultural communications. And he was also currently inducted into their prestigious Alumni Academy just a few years ago. Tonight we'll discuss leadership, mentorship with Tim, as long as he's just going to hang out with us for the rest of the show as well and talk about what's going on in the wide world of sports. Let's give my man, my friend, Tim Tarantine, a real sports guy's type of welcome. How's it going, Tarantine?
Man, everything is great. What's happening, fellas?
It's all good. All good.
Hey, it's gravy, man. Glad to have you on.
Looking forward to having you on. Whenever we have you on, the energy level just skyrockets. We're just going to jump on in. We got a lot of stuff to cover. First, obviously, we talk about sports here, but there's so much more you're going to bring to the table in the area of mentorship, leadership, and other stuff that we're going to get to.
Sure.
But some of the listeners may or may not know, but you were once really heavily involved in athletics as a participant. Talk about how this experience as an athlete has helped shape you into the person and leader that you are right now.
Yeah, that's a loaded question, PT, and I'll tell you, the first thing that immediately comes to mind, I played ball with guys who didn't necessarily like to pass the ball. I did a lot of the dirty work. Lots of rebounds, lots of pick setting. And if the guys are listening, they know who I'm talking about. I won't call them out. I'll put it this way. When the opportunity to shoot the ball anywhere past half court came to be, they would do it with no regard for a guy moving and working underneath the basket. So the first thing I learned from sports was that I want the ball. And that has transferred to life. I've had great coaches and mentors who have taught me both, you know, on the basketball floor, on the track field, and wherever I was, and now in business, that it is advantageous to have the ball in your hands. So however you're leading, whatever you're doing, waiting for someone else to give you permission to move the ball up the field or to move the next agenda for the community, or to push things to a higher level, we just shouldn't wait for that. We ought to want to have the ball and then just push for greatness, always moving the ball up the floor and not being defensive but always being on offense. So that's the first thing that I learned from sports that really came out of pain and anguish, was that I want the basketball. I want the ball. And it applies to business today. I don't want to wait to ask somebody permission to do the right thing. I want to have the freedom to do so. And so I like to play offense. The other critical thing I think that sports taught me was that other people matter. And it ain't just about you and what you do on the court or on the field. That in team sports, right, you can't do anything without the unit. And I've tried to take that same approach to the work I do professionally, with my family, sports, doesn't matter what's going on. I think valuing other people as important to your success, both on and off the court, is critical. And that's a lesson that I'm thankful to have learned at an early age. I guess if there were one more thing I would think about was that It is imperative to believe in something bigger than yourself. And I went to Kalamazoo Central World Class High School. I know they took World Class off the building, and people don't really like you to say that about your school, but it was a world class experience for me in high school because I got to buy into something larger than me, larger than my grade, larger than my group of fellas, larger than my friends. We were giants. And,
sure.
I think it's critical for all of us to be able to have something that's bigger than us, that's sacred to us. And to this day, man, I love going back to KC because it's bigger than me and it's something that I love. And that's a lesson that really has driven itself home for me in my professional life also.
So, Tim, you talked about giving back. I mean, that really could be your middle name. I know a few years ago you were part of the leadership team with Derek Jeter's foundation, the Turn 2 Foundation. Can you talk a little bit about your experience in that foundation?
Yeah, man. If I had to give credit to someone, it would be the Jeter family. It really gave me an opportunity to lead at a very young age. They allowed me to be a program director when I was 19 years old. And I was responsible for 20 kids whose parents were or families were struggling with either abuse issues, physical, drug-related, alcohol-related. These kids were coming from hell, literally. And it was my job to help them put a stop to the generational curses that had plagued so many of their families around drugs, alcohol, anger, abuse, you name it. And the biggest lesson I learned from that experience, those 5 years, was that environment drives behavior. And that there's so many people that don't make it, don't take themselves to a next level, can't aspire to a different place because they've never experienced or seen anything better. And so we had the resources and the support of the Turn 2 Foundation to work with these young children and give them new experiences. Man, we took kids out to the equestrian camp to ride horses. Now, can you imagine me driving a 15-passenger van out in the middle of the country to take kids to a horse barn from the hood? I mean, these are kids from the bricks. And I'm telling you, these kids did a better job with those horses and were more comfortable on the horses than the kids who had been riding horses since they were 2 years old. I mean, to see the kids' lives be changed through new experiences, that's the power of sports stars and their foundations, is that they get to provide new experiences for kids. And when you provide new experiences, you also provide new expectations about what life can be for you. And I am eternally grateful to the Jeters, to the Turn 2 Foundation, to Derek, for allowing me the opportunity over those 5 years not to just work with the elementary kids, but I also ended up being the interim director of the Jeters Leaders Program, which was the high school leadership program. And so, man, I just had the time of my life, and what a heck of a start to a career and to a pathway, man, to lead at that young of an age and really represent a guy and a family who has represented philanthropy and aspiration at its highest level.
You talked about leadership, and this will be my last question before I open it up to the guys here. Well, recently you recorded as saying that leadership must shift from me-centric to we-centric. What does this mean?
Well, man, if you look at the state of leadership today, there's a serious problem. I mean, all of us go to work every day. I mean, every American, every person in the world wakes up, goes to work, and tries to do something. And we're all surrounded by leaders who seem to have forgotten this critical point that I learned on a basketball court in third grade. And I said it before, that other people matter. And that if you're going to lead well, it can't just be about what you know or where you went to school or who your uncle is. It needs to be about your ability to see the best in people and then to bring out the best in people, because at the end of the day, the times call for people who can get it done. And you're not going to be able to get it done thinking that your pedigree is going to carry you that way. And so by talking about being we-centric, it's about the center of your existence as a leader has to be about how well do you see the best and bring out the best in the people around you? Because that's what's going to make you successful, right? And I don't care what your business is. It's the same thing applies for a coach on a basketball court, in a classroom with children, in the New York Stock Exchange. If you can't figure out a way to get over yourself long enough to bring out the best in the people around you, you are on a quick ride to failure. And I have to say also, that applies to our nation. If America can't remember that, we're in trouble too. We can't remember that it's about all of us. We all in trouble, I'm telling you. And I'm not a doom and gloom guy. I just know that people matter. And we didn't get anywhere by ourselves. It took people looking out for us. And so I think leaders got to get back to that community and that communal approach that other people always matter. And if you don't pay attention to that, man, you'll be talking about how good you were.
You're on with the Real Sports Guys right now. If you want to get on and talk to Tim and the rest of the guys, feel free to give us a call at area code 347-989-0844. You can also get this on iTunes starting tomorrow, or as well as on the website of realsportsguys.com. Now, Tim, you've been vibing along pretty good, but I'm about to open it up. I'm about to let the dogs out the cage. I'm going to kick it to Mark the Game Changer.
All right. Well, again, welcome, Mr. Tarantine. Greatly appreciate you gracing us with your presence. You said some real profound things and some things I definitely dig. I want to take it away from sports for a moment and keep it along the lines that we're going right now. When you're talking about the state of our country, and you're talking about leadership, both from a political perspective, but also, you know, even at a lower level when you're talking about community leadership, you know, all four of us are African-American males, which in this country can mean a lot of things for our opportunities as young men. We've survived and been able to overcome some of those obstacles, and I think we're all in a position where we now try and turn around and provide an opportunity for others who may be in that same plight that we were in and going through some of the things that we went through as young men. When you're talking about leadership in this country, what do you think is going to take for that light bulb to go off when you talked about politicians and community leaders to understand that it's not necessarily the whole bootstraps is a myth. No one pulls himself up by the bootstraps, by their bootstraps. Everybody has a ton of support. Everybody has a ton of help. And at the end of the day, you know, when you have whether it be athletes giving Hall of Fame speeches or CEOs talking in front of a board, no one recognizes those invisible folks who help them get to that point where they can be a CEO, where they can be a Hall of Fame athlete, where they can be, you know, an award-winning artist or musician or actor or actress. Those people that we all look up to didn't get there by themselves, but we seem to believe in this myth of rugged individualism in this country. What is it going to take for us to kind of move away from that?
Well, I mean, I think, first of all, it depends on whose trophy you're trying to receive. I mean, everybody wants financial comfort, right? Everybody wants some financial stability. So when you're talking about these people we look up to, most of the time, we're not talking about people who are not at the economic 1%, right? So first of all, if all you're aspiring to do is make money in this life, you want all of your notoriety to be about money? Well, I tell you what, you're going to have a rich widow or a rich widower or some rich children who are going to take your money when you're dead, and they're going to go on about their business as if you never existed. I mean, at the end of the day, for me, it's about what do we really want? And unfortunately, because we live in a capitalist society, and I'm not against capitalism, I think capitalism can work. But I think that people have these delusions of grandeur when it comes to success and what success means. And success is how well you sleep at night. Success is all about the impact that you have right where you are. And by impact, I mean, have you changed the conditions for which you were given? And have you changed them for the better? Then you've been successful, right? And that sounds real corny, and it sounds simple. But let's just be real. There's a whole lot of people who have their 40 seconds of fame who haven't done one thing to even change the block they live on. So then the question becomes, when it's all said and done, what have you done? What have you stood for? What changes have you made? Whose life have you enriched? And so when you take that away, when you take the money piece away of it, and you start to think about the meaning of your life and the impact you have, then you start to move to this concept in leadership about diminishing resources and how people see the world. So if you're a person who sees the world with the cup half empty, or if there's never enough, if your mentality is scarcity, then you don't believe things can be better because there's not enough. Well, real leaders, successful leaders, transformational leaders, believe in abundance, that there's always enough, and that when times seem like they're getting tough, we don't break into tribes. I mean, man, let's face it, this whole political system and all that we're seeing on television, this is no different than the gang prevention work I did in the neighborhood, bro. When things get tough, people pick a tribe, and it really don't matter why you're there. It just so happens to be that you pick your team, and you're going to roll that thing till it falls off. That is the most ignorant approach anybody could ever have. Because it ain't about if you're Republican or Democrat or a Blood or a Crip or if you're a Yankee or a Red Sox. It just doesn't matter. What matters is what impact did you have, and were you able to take the abundant resources and blessings that you had at your disposal and use them to change the situation you're in. And that's, to me, that's the crux of the matter, man. And I'm thankful that at 33 years old, man, I'm starting to understand that thing. Now, that don't mean that I don't want to be financially secure or take it to another level professionally. Of course I do. I go after that with all my might every day. But if while doing that, I forget people and why I'm on this earth, and I lose my desire to have impact, to change what's around me, man, and it's time for me to check out of here anyway, because people are going to be fishing for stuff to say at my funeral. And we've all been to those funerals, right? The people make up things to say. Right?
He had a nice personality.
That's right. He had a good job.
Oh, he had some nice shoes.
That's right. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. It's over. Right? And so, I mean, come on, bro. So I think what happens, though, people get afraid. Life is tough. Situations are tough. We can't see a way to make a difference. And the problems seem real big. And my suggestion is always, well, is the person who sits next to you at work, are they different because you're there? Are your children different? Are the people that, your neighbors next door? I mean, it ain't got to be a huge impact. It's huge if something changes for the better, man. And so I think it's going to take a resurrection of values, in that it don't have to be about being an all-star, and it doesn't have to be about media proclaiming you as the best. The question is, do the people around you feel like they're the best because they've been in your presence? That's the question.
Tim, this is Devon. I really enjoy having you on the show, and I want to take this kind of line that you're going in. And over the past few weeks, and really months, we've been and we had Alan Sack on. We've been talking about, you know, the state of college sports, particularly big time college sports. And I don't want to get into the pay other professionals or not. But one of the things I'm really interested in, even from a resource question, is, you know, how do we, even in this kind of environment, work with student athletes to build the capacity to be leaders, even in the face of the type of temptations that come with being in big time sports? So we may not, can we get back to the days of Lou Alcindor and Kareem, where you were great, but you also had capacity to think beyond even what you did in athletics, and you could benefit from both those experiences? Can you talk a little bit about, you know, if you were to sit on a steering committee put together by the NCAA, or if you were to be able to get, you know, asked to come in and, you know, Barry Alvarez or anyone came in and said, let's look at this, how we might do this, what recommendations would you make?
I think immediately I would look at coaching and not the coach on the team. But if I have a 13-year-old daughter and a 3-year-old son, both are athletes. If anybody knows TJ or Olivia, you know they get down. They're already better athletes than I've ever been. And if colleges ever come to my door talking to me about my children, one of the main questions I got to ask is, who's going to be with my children? Who's going to mentor them? Who's their coach? Who's their life coach? Who's going to be the person who's not talking to them about basketball but about life? And I think one of the ways we get leaders, I mean, let's think about it. Lou Alcindor and others had community leaders and coaches who mentored them, who taught them how to carry themselves, who taught them the value of being community activists as well as athletes. Well, that remnant, unfortunately, has left many of our communities where our student athletes are coming from. And so we're going to have to be really, really intentional about coaching and mentoring relationships for student athletes. I have a couple mentees of my own. One is an athlete at Western Michigan University, and he's a great kid. He comes from, you know, the rough side of Detroit, right? And Detroit is rough as it is in some areas. Go Detroit, by the way. We want Detroit to rebound. So anybody who's hating on Detroit, quit hating on them. They need help.
That's
right. Money. Start a business. Cheer for Detroit, because so goes Detroit, goes Michigan. But I'll put it.
I want winners.
I want. Yeah, man. I want winners in the D2. Here's the point. Before I met this kid, he had his coaches and his professors, all of whom are good people, but they all needed something from him. I don't need anything from this kid. The only thing I desire for this young man is that he finish his education and that he become a world-class citizen. That's all I need. And so student athletes, because of the pressures, because of the time, this kid can't even sit down to have dinner with my family, because when he's done with practice, he's in the weight room. When he's done with the weight room, he's in class. When he's done with class, he's in film session. When he's done with film session, he's back into weights or whatever the case may be. And so the demands on athletes are such that everybody around these student athletes want, need, and desire something from them. And so we need some people to surround these young folks in a very intentional way in coaching and mentoring relationships who don't need anything from these kids, who only want the best for young people. And I believe that the athletes of the 60s and 70s who were vocal and who were very participatory in the public sphere had those mentors, had those people who didn't care about how many points they scored, but cared about how they carried themselves in public. And so I think, to the extent that mentoring and coaching programs, life coaching programs, can be infused into the student athletes and into the athletic programs in the collegiate area, man, we're going to go a long way, because most of what these students are going to have to need to know when they get done bouncing that ball or catching that ball or tackling somebody, quite frankly, those connections are not found in between the lines. And we're graduating kids who are student athletes who are no more prepared for the world than I am prepared to be a ski champion.
Tim, I want to hit a follow up on that one, because, you know, as you started talking about, even talking about Detroit, and I know Derek Coleman and others have been involved in doing what Magic has done in terms of economic development. You talked about Jeter's investment in young people. How do we begin to talk about that in terms of leveraging some of our athletes around making those kind of commitments to the community?
I think it starts with mentoring, man. If the only thing you've ever seen athletes do is throw a camp in the summertime for kids and give some food away for the holidays, then that's all you know. But the truth of the matter is, there some of the biggest economic development booms that have been known to this country began with philanthropy. Started with major philanthropic efforts that then spurred economic investment. The Kalamazoo Promise is a perfect example. Seven anonymous donors gave millions of dollars so that every child in the Kalamazoo Public School System who is eligible through grades and years and time in the district, et cetera, could have their tuition paid for college at a state higher education institution. Well, the Kalamazoo Promise not only brought all kind of national attention, it told business folks, this is a cool place to invest. I can build a manufacturing facility here because I want the families to work for me and be motivated to stay, right? And that happened because of a philanthropic effort. What would happen in our country if athletes began to take some of their earnings and put it into venture funds to start new businesses in their neighborhoods where they come from, as opposed to building new gyms? Not that gyms are bad. Believe me, you. A basketball hoop saved my life on several occasions. But I think that without that mentoring, without that knowledge, without that coaching, athletes don't necessarily understand the power of their own philanthropy, and they surely don't understand the power of their collective philanthropy to drive growth in their neighborhood, and quite frankly, across this nation.
These are some nuggets. I hope folks are catching these nuggets. And definitely, you know, when you talk about the Kalamazoo Promise, I had a chance to hear, I believe, Dr. Brown, Janice Brown, talk about it. She was recently in Wisconsin last year talking about it and sat in the session. But the way you talked about in terms of leveraging that kind of opportunity in terms of creating something that would begin to activate the way young people would think about education as a possibility. You know, when you put that out there and you say, you can go, that turns on a whole new way of thinking in that, you know, helping athletes, they've had even in the Madison area a couple of opportunities to bring some of the former athletes together to talk about, you know, entrepreneurialism, economic development, and really trying to build capacity for folks to understand what impact you can have is powerful. So I think this is something that, I think as RSG, we need to continue to talk about, you know, how we can continue to activate that, because I think this is important. It's an important part of making changes in the community when people make strategic investments. So I think you're hitting it right on the head. We're happy to have you on it. But we do have you on here for some sports stuff. And we know you're a Lakers fan, too.
I am, and I have not given up yet.
And can you give me a, where do you think they're gonna go? What are they gonna do at this moment? They look like they're in the corner. They got a little checkmate going. We have a lot of Laker fans that come on the show. So what's gonna happen with the Lakers?
As a lifelong Laker fan, I feel like somebody stole my bicycle. I'm kind of kind of just walking down the sidewalk, kicking rocks and carrying on. Man, so first of all, I have no clue what the Lakers ownership is doing right now. I am a disgruntled Laker fan, but I will tell you that that young man, the Black Mamba, is still breaking records. I was just reading today, this cat just broke the Laker record for free throws made. Think of all the greats that have played in the purple and gold. Mm. And then he just broke the record for, I believe it was, field goals made. He just broke one of Kareem's records. The free throws and field goals just recently. That's crazy that with a horrible team, and I mean horrible, and I don't know if World be jailed or whatever the boy name is, Ron Artest. His mama called him Ron Artest. I don't know what he's doing. He's lost his game. And Paul Kyle Gasoft has kind of really disappeared. And I, again, I'm a Laker fan, and you all know I bleed purple and gold. But I am very disappointed. I think they seriously, and I love Derek Fisher, but his best days are 5 years behind him. It is time for a new point guard. And it is also time for Dwight Howard to bring his talents to Los Angeles.
Mm.
Period. And let the Black Mamba and Superman have some fun.
You're on with the real sports guys right now. If you want to call in, the phone number is 347-989-0844. We've got Tim Tarantine from Kalamazoo, Michigan on the line. Now, we got a lot of sports to get to. We're going to get to five on the black-hand side here shortly and talk more basketball. But before we end up your segment here, Tim, we want to give you an opportunity to talk about three charities close to your heart. We already talked a little bit about Derek Jeter's Turn 2 Foundation, but I know Greg Jennings of the Green Bay Packers, good friend of yours, and you're involved in his foundation, as well as the Kalamazoo County Ready Forwards. Talk a little bit about those two charities.
Sure. I'll start with Greg Jennings Foundation. You can go to gj85foundation.com. And the only thing I'll say about that is this. Greg Jennings is a young, young man, and the way he carries himself in public and private makes me proud to even speak the young man's name. I have seen Greg in crowds of hundreds, thousands of people, and he doesn't turn children away. He doesn't turn adults away. He's kind, he's patient, and the work he's trying to do with his foundation is all about education and young people. Greg, before he went to the Packers, made a commitment to finish his degree at Western Michigan University, and he did so. Greg made a commitment to give back to Kalamazoo and live there, and he has made investments and done so. And because of how he's carried himself, I'm proud to do anything I can to help he and his family and their foundation give back and change Southwest Michigan. So if you've got time, you want to volunteer, you got money from the end of last year that you haven't spent yet, make a donation to gj85.com. I think Greg Jennings just does an outstanding job representing Kalamazoo and Southwest Michigan, and it doesn't hurt that the man's a Super Bowl champ. The other thing that's near and dear to my heart that has always been near and dear to my heart but has finally hit home, I've got a 3.5-year-old son, and when I look at education rates around this country and the failure that we have had as a nation and as a state in preparing our young people to have a great education and be prepared for the workforce, it starts with early childhood education. And not just early childhood education, but high-quality early childhood education. And there is rigorous data out there and research around what makes high quality. And so a group of people, probably 300 people, man, for the last 3 or 4 years have been working on this issue of early childhood development and high-quality early childhood education. in Kalamazoo County. And KC Ready Force, Kalamazoo County Ready Force, was made to make sure that every early childhood place who will be willing to participate is set up to be certified as quality, and that every kid, no matter what socioeconomic background they're from, has the opportunity to go to a high-quality early childhood education experience as a four-year-old in Kalamazoo County. And I'm telling you, it makes such a difference for early childhood education. My son at 3.5 years old is teaching me stuff he's learning from school. And if we can let kids get a good start, then we can help to level the playing field in America, which has become such a divided issue for children, depending on socioeconomics and race. I mean, the gap is just getting larger, and I've been committed to trying to help close that gap through quality early childhood education. So check out kcreadyfors.org and see the work we're doing. If you're in other communities, hey, use it as a model. Steal it. Take it. Run with it. Because we got to save our kids, and we got to do it early.
All right, my man. Greatly appreciated for sharing those. And if you want any information, Tim, do you have a website where people can get in contact with you to talk about these charities or you know, get some information about how to contribute?
Absolutely. So Greg Jennings Foundation, GJ85.com, and KC Ready Fours is KC Ready Fours, the number 4S.com. And then I have a blog site of which I'll post some of the charities I care about after tonight's show, timtarantine.wordpress.com. timtarantine.wordpress.com. Check out my blog. I've been doing some work lately around Dr. King's birthday and others. So there's some fun stuff to read on there. But I will also post some things about some of the things we're doing on the charity side to help out.
All right. We're going to take a quick musical break, about 4 minutes. We're going to play some Big Crit for you. This song is called Big Crit. It's called Dreaming. We're going to play that for you, and then we're going to get back. We're going to come back with the Five on the Black Hand Side. All right, Real Sports Guys, RSU Renegade Radio. Old school.
Don't be alarmed if you don't make it, that's just part of the game. Besides, I ain't rapper by dope, nor did I sell it. I guess the story of a country boy just ain't compelling. A&R searching for a hit, I just need a meal. Couldn't afford to pay the rent, but passed up on the deal, cause it wasn't right, sometimes it gotta wait the storm. In a class of my own, but I was scared to raise my arm. Like, this my dream, this my life, I sacrifice it all. Except my soul in a firm belief there is a God. Watching out when all the other used to doubt. Felt my pain and pointed down and said, son, your time is now. I think my grandma pulled some strings on the low, but that's between her and the Lord, I never know. For those that caught me in the spin and complex magazine, double XL, the vibe, and whatever in between, it's safe to say that dreams come true, I guess. Don't let nobody tell you, try for yourself. Just know that I was once considered just a dreamer, but I paid my dues and turned so many doubters to believers. They used to say,
that was Big Crit, Dreaming, nice little ditty. Again, you're listening to the Real Sports Guys, the Real Guys Talk Real Sports. One third of the illustrious three-man booth. Mark is the game changer. D. Wills, PhD. We also have special guest, Tim Tarantine, holding it down with us tonight. And so we're going to continue with the show, and we're going to jump into the five on the black-hand side.
Five on the black hand side.
All right. For this week's five on the black hand side, we're going to talk a little NBA hoops. We're going to pass it around and get into give you all some thoughts on the NBA season. Again, if you want to call in, feel free to get on 1-347-989-0844. Again, that's 1-347-989-0844. Feel free to get on with the Real Sports Guys. All right. Here we go. First up in the five on the black hand side, D. Wills, just give us some general thoughts on the NBA season thus far. The condensed schedule has caused a lot of problems for teams, particularly older teams, teams with not a lot of depth. But it's also been beneficial for younger teams with deeper benches, such as the Indiana Pacers and the Philadelphia 76ers. What are your thoughts on the pace of everything, how things are going, how the season progressing is progressing, and where do you see it going?
In some ways, I we talked about this. Even with the lockout and everything else, I said, once the ball goes up, we're not it's going to be a distant memory for us. And I thought that the later start would create this incredible energy around it. And I think that's been good for the NBA that we've had this kind of condensed schedule, a lot of this action packed, and you're seeing how teams have adjusted. You're seeing how we just talked a little bit about the Lakers and other, how people are even panicked or not panicked, made good decisions or not. That the cream is rising to the top, but we're also seeing some new bubbles, particularly from teams like Philadelphia, which we'll talk about later. So we're seeing some teams that have surprised us, and so I like the energy. I think it's created the buzz. We talked about this a few weeks ago. I mean, even the free NBA pass, I think, was a great way of just getting it. I watched more basketball with that free NBA pass. I was going back and forth with Phil T every night. Did you see that? We were texting back and forth. So I think they did a good job. It hasn't been good, obviously, for older teams because of recovery. But, hey, that's how it goes sometimes. The game is a game always. So I think part of it is, you know, folks will have to adjust. And it's also forced and exposed coaching. And I've been talking about this for a couple of weeks, and y'all been following me with that. But I think, you know, people haven't really critically analyzed, and we started this conversation with Dr. Williams around I think sometimes the quality of coaching and being able to think outside the box around rotations has gone down. And the great coaches have figured out how to manage this process in a way in which they've been thinking about rotations, they've been thinking about a lot of things. So I think this has been great for the season. I think it's been a good shot in the arm. I think it's going to be a hot end of the season. And I think because the season is going to go into June a little bit more, I think that's going to be a good thing for the sport. So I'm okay with the beginning of the season. I think it's going to be a really good finish. It's going to be a race to see who gets to the playoffs.
Mr. Ty, your thoughts?
Well, I think, first of all, you know, the anticipation was critical. The free agency frenzy was critical. And I think now the whole question of what are the Heat going to do? That's dominant in my mind. That is one of the most compelling questions of this condensed season. Is can Miami be the team they were slated to be last year? I mean, if you think about it, no matter how many times Blake Griffin dunks on somebody's neck, no matter how many times Kobe breaks a record, it always comes back to them three jokers down there on South Beach, period. And I think the NBA is taking full advantage of that stardom. The other thing that I love about the condensed season is that it opened up some new approaches from a media perspective. Did anybody catch that show on NBA TV with Steve Kerr and Charles Barkley and Chris Webber and Shaq? I think it was called League
Open Court.
Pass,
yes,
Open Court. Man, that was one of the best shows I've seen in sports in terms of a talk show. And that would have never happened had we not had the lockout, right? We would have never seen or heard a lot of those stories that make the game so special and make the game what it is and how much we love it today. And so I come at this not necessarily from the basketball standpoint, but from what keeps people coming back. I think it's the Heat, and I think it's all the new mediums and shows and approaches that had to come to keep basketball alive year-round while it was functionally dead. So I'm excited, man. I think we're going to have a nice end run here to the playoffs, and it will be interesting to see who's standing at the end.
All right. So we have a caller who's going to join us for this segment. We have Justin Page from Atlanta on the line. Justin, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. How about you guys?
Oh, very good, very good.
Doing good.
I've been listening, and I want to say that I respect everybody's opinion. However, I feel as if the shortened season, I'm going to take a contrarian point of view.
Uh-oh.
Okay? I feel as if the shortened season is hurting the game. I think it's hurting the product. I think it's hurting the players. Look at the injuries as you look at Derrick Rose, who was out six games last week, Rajon Rondo, who's still out today. All of your marquee players, nobody's playing any games because they want to save themselves for the playoffs because the regular season is no longer important. They're hurt because they didn't have the opportunity to work in their facilities in the off season. I think the layoff has hurt the game immensely. And I feel
now,
like
Justin, I'm going to jump in real quick, because what I want to tell you is your perspective actually isn't that contrarian, because I totally agree with you. I feel that things are rushed. Things don't look crisp. Things don't
Absolutely.
Look in tune. A lot of teams seem out of sync because they don't have that practice time. And, you know, D talked about before how the shortened season kind of exposed coaching. I think it also highlights the value of coaching. You know, as a coach myself, practice is where I get my work done. And in the games, I'm basically just trying to remind folks of what we talked about in practice. But other than, you know, managing timeouts and making sure...
Listen, we're talking about practice.
Like that.
Not a game, not a game, not a game. We're talking about practice.
Clip, FYI. Love the clip. Just got my Allen Iverson Turkish jersey in the mail last week.
Wow. Another got an AI Turkish jersey.
I just wanted to complete my AI. Oh, love AI. Favorite player of all time. But continue.
I believe you, JP.
Real quick, Justin. Last week over the past couple of months, we've been doing a top 50 list. If you had to put AI in the top 50 list, where would he be? Just off the top of your dome.
Off top of my dome, not even thinking about the question, top five.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Michael Jordan first, Kobe Bryant second, Allen Iverson maybe third. Absolutely.
What? Wow. So to kind of recap.
I'm a huge Magic Johnson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar fan. Allen Iverson, I don't think he gets the respect that he deserves. You remember last year All-Star when you guys mentioned NBA game time earlier, and Charles Barkley, what did Charles Barkley do? He picked Allen Iverson first in his fantasy draft for all NBA. You guys remember?
Yeah, he got laughed out, didn't he?
He got laughed out, but I felt him. Allen Iverson revolutionized the game.
I'm with you.
Allen Iverson revolutionized the game. They changed the crossover rule for Allen Iverson. Do you guys not recall?
Justin, I would say that I think I may have had Allen Iverson probably ranked the highest. Did I or not with fellas? I want to make sure Phil T, I think you keep in the list. I think I might have ranked. I think I might have had him.
Right here.
He may be the highest rated person.
You had Iverson at 33. I had Iverson at 29, and Marcus, who I would expect to have higher, had Iverson all the way down at 44. So we got 44 versus 5. This is provocative, game changer.
Hey, it's provocative. Now, I'm going to keep my swords. I'm going to keep my swords in the case of the day. I'm going to let y'all handle this one. I went in on Andrew from L.A. last week. I'm going to let you guys take care of this one because, you know, AI top five, I don't know.
Justin, I would agree. Some of your points you said about the NBA season, I think I might be valid. But also it does speak to the fact that, you know, it also highlights the fact that some of these players did not make the commitment in the offseason. I mean, we got Kobe came in injured to this day. He's still playing at a high level. Some of the people who have been dedicated to the game are continuing to play and work through this stuff. So I'm not sure. I know some of these guys. These guys they have places they could go to stay in shape and to do the things they need to do to be in shape. And so it's about the professionalism. So you got to come in and ready to play. So I wanted to make that point on Iverson. You can't. I'm trying to statistically put Iverson above. I love AI. I think he was a game changer at his size. I made all the arguments around AI. But I can't put him over can you put him over Oscar Robertson, who averaged a triple-double over the first 5 years of his career? This is a guard. Will Chamberlain? I mean, you gotta give me something. You got to give me something top five. Now, if you said Iverson at 15, I might look at you through the phone, through the screen, try to envision you. but I might give you something. But when you say top five, you put him over Tim Duncan. You put him over. You start to look at that. You got to give me some statistical evidence that helps me understand that. Give that to me.
Am I on air? Ladies and
gentlemen,
I want to be on air. You are absolutely on air. Evidence to talk about the most game changing player in our decade. How old are you, sir?
Me, I'm in my early 40s. I watched Iverson from the time he was at Georgetown. I understood Iverson. He was game changing a while, but did he make players around him better?
So you watched the Iceman George Gervin.
I love Gervin. I talked about Gervin. I made a case for Gervin. So I like Gervin.
And you're telling me that George Gervin did for the game what AI did for the game?
Hell yeah.
I'm an idiot.
Yeah. Every time I finger rolled as a kid, I was thinking about getting ice.
AI built off Gervin.
That's right.
Every kid growing up in the 70s or the 80s had an Iceman poster. So I understand AI's cultural impact on the game, and you could factor that in. But when you just start looking at the numbers, you start looking at the impact of the championships.
Not even the numbers, D. Wills, you going easy. I'm unsheathing the sword now. I'm unsheathing the sword.
Oh,
you going easy. You going easy, man. It ain't got nothing to do with numbers or none of that. All right? AI is an excellent, excellent offensive player. One of the most dynamic offensive players, given his size to quickness, all those things. You talk about the amount, his production to his size, unbelievable, unseen, something we've never seen before. But let's not fool ourselves here. AI was a sieve on defense. Brother's lightning quick. He gonna come up off 2-3 steals a night. Okay, just off GP, just off quickness. All right, just off fast twitch muscles. All right, he gonna get a couple steals a night. So don't give me AI averaged 2 steals for 10 years. Yeah, he did. That was mostly playing passing lane. He was never a lockdown on ball defender. So that's one side of the court he really didn't play. Now the other thing about AI's game, I truly believe AI. And again, I'm a Georgetown fan. I'm an AI fan. I roll with AI all the way through his career. I wish the brother could have accepted the role of coming off the bench and being a spark plug for somebody, but his ego wouldn't allow him to do that. And I can understand why. When you are that guy, when you are 6 foot, 150 pounds soaking wet, and you killing cats, you're killing some of the greatest athletes in the league at the clip that he was, I can understand why your ego would get to a point where I don't agree with it, but I can understand it. All right? This guy was a... I won't say he was one-dimensional, because he put pressure on a defense in a way that not a lot of players can. All right? He forced you to constantly be in help mode all the time. At the same time, even though he forced teams to constantly be in help mode, he never really used that to his advantage as far as allowing his teammates to become threats, which would make his scoring job easier. AI never really mastered that particular skill as far as being a lead dog. How do I use my teammates to make my job easier, which is why he got beat up so much? He comes down court, dribble out the shot clock, everybody on defense is staring at him. Then he goes into the lane, tries to get fouled, gets knocked down. That's why he took so many hits over his career. He didn't really utilize his teammates to create better spacing for him to utilize his own talents. And so that's my gripe with AI. That's why I had him at 44. Sword is back in the sheath, man.
Tim Tarantine, what you got on AI?
Well, as long as the sword is back in the sheath, I'll try to make a comment or two. I think AI. I ain't packed my gun or nothing today. I'm just going to put the
Hey, I'm putting Lulu away, man. I'm putting Lulu away.
Hey, y'all did not tell me this was not rated 17, Jack. Anyway, here's what I say about AI, man. Great player. One of the greatest ball handlers and shot creators that the game has ever seen. He was a cultural catalyst. He brought basketball from an elite place to a grimy place. I mean, Allen Iverson, basically, everything about him was a middle finger to David Stern. and he shook up the NBA, and he shook up the cultural aspect of basketball. He connected the hip-hop culture to the game in the mainstream. Allen Iverson is responsible for that, and I give him that credit. But I cannot put Allen Iverson in the top 10 players in NBA history. I can't do it. And that is no mean or disrespect to Allen Iverson. But Allen Iverson, because for all his greatness,
cannot play with him, cannot win with him, cannot coach with him, can't do it. I want winners.
I believe Allen Iverson could have won a few if his personality and his approach to the game, as Marcus had spoken of, was more congenial. And I think Iverson's own personal demons carried themselves onto the court and limited his ability to make himself into the elite in terms of top 10 of all time, period. And I ain't no statistician or nothing. I'm a fan. And I'll tell you, I can't put him in the top 10.
Can't do it.
Justin, are you still there?
Still all right. Listening to you guys allows me the opportunity to hear perspective. However, I think you all are forgetting the glory years. Glory years is a stretch because you all, you know, he didn't win a championship, nor did Charles Barkley, nor did Karl Malone. Nor did half of the great scorers in the game. But what Allen Iverson did for the sport is bigger than wins and losses. Hell, he's the only guy to beat the Los Angeles Lakers in their championship run the year they last won the championship. Allen Iverson led the league in steals for 8 out of his 13 seasons in the NBA. The last caller mentioned he was a great offensive player. But yet this guy led the league in steals. I'm a fan of Allen Iverson. I think that his name has been somewhat tarnished because of his attitude. And I respect everybody, all the callers' opinions.
And I love your point about lead the league in steals. Normally when you lead the league in steals, you're also on the all-defensive team. And so this goes back to the game changers point. I don't think he ever made an all-defensive team. I don't see it here. So what was it about his peers, if he led the league in steals, didn't allow him to also make the all-defensive team at least once?
He wasn't a ball-on-ball defender. He wasn't a one-on-one guy, all right, I'll check your best player type of guy.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Jordan, he'll guard your best player regardless of position, as will Kobe Bryant, as will Rajon Rondo nowadays,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
AI played off the ball. He would guard the passing lanes, which is, I would argue, is as important. He would make sure that you can't get that pass to your best player because he wants to guard the passing lane. However, the league doesn't recognize off-the-ball defenders like they do on-the-ball defenders. That's the difference.
Well, I'll say
Here's a simple fundamental reason why. Nobody has ever scored a basket off the ball. If you ain't got the ball, you can't score.
What we will say with this, you came into the jungle, you fought hard, you took the swords, Justin. You came in strong. You made your own compelling argument, and your shot got knocked off the glass because we do knock stuff off the glass. But I do have to say, you battled to the end, and you're strong and you're holding on to your convictions around Iverson. So I got to give you a champ on that one. I'm not gonna give you one of them RSG rounds of applauses, but you hold strong to that one.
earned a few stripes hanging in there. He hung in there.
He got to the end on that one.
He did. He was going to stick to his guns. And last week we had a cat come on claiming Kobe was the greatest player of all time. And Mr. Tarantino, I know you're a Kobe fan. I know you're a fan of the Mamba. I know you're a Laker fan. Where do you rank Kobe?
Not number one after last week. I think I'm going to stick with three.
I think I'm going to settle in exactly at three.
I think we're at three. Yeah. Seriously, man, I think Kobe, I measure greatness by Michael Jordan, period. Michael Jordan is number one. Ain't nobody going to be able to convince me otherwise. I always have believed and will always believe that Michael Jordan is the standard by which greatness is measured in basketball, period. And when I look at the characteristics and the statistics that Michael was able to put forth, his heart for the game, his will to win, his ability to engage his team, his courage to face the best in the other team and his opponents, and his will to win, I ain't seen nothing like that outside of Kobe on an every night basis. Kobe's got something special now, and he's not going to beat out Michael in my book on any day. But he's in the top five consistently in my mind, Kobe being Bryant, no doubt about it.
I appreciate you sharing that. I appreciate you sharing that. Because, that's an honest perspective. I'm coming around on Kobe. We've had a lot of Kobe talk. As we've gone through our top 50, a lot of Kobe talk, and I'm really impressed by the season that Kobe's having, given the mileage on his legs and the structure of the season. He's playing at an extremely high level. He's playing, heavy minutes, back-to-backs, 4 and 6 days, just at a really unbelievable clip, and he's playing well. So, I've always told people I'm not a Kobe fan, but I'm definitely not a Kobe hater. But I'm coming around on Kobe. I'm starting to come over to the other side. Coming to the other side on Kobe.
And I would tell you, like I would tell you about an episode of TV that's going slow. If you ain't a Kobe fan yet, keep watching him, because he's the kind of guy that just keeps going. There's something about that dude, man. His will to win and his will to be great just supersedes his physical stature right now. He's out of this world, man. He has tapped into something in his mental, in his brain, in his capacity, in his humanity that's just crazy. He's not supposed to be able to still score as many points as he is after the wear and tear. But he's got that Jordan-esque thing, man, that will to keep going.
He's also got quite a bit of motivation, too, because Vanessa came up off on him in that court case, man. She came in the court with a ski mask on.
He's not eating out a few nights during the year.
He ain't struggling, but he came off quite a bit there. He came off quite a bit there. It's a good move by her.
He ain't got nothing left to do but go on Oprah and write a book. that brother got to make some money. She buried his underwear in the backyard. He can't leave the house.
Put a root on him.
She took all his change.
he's got some explaining to do with that one. PhD, man, where you at?
What's the question?
The question. All right, number two. Give me some disappointing teams or players this first half of this first little bit of the season. Who disappointed you? Who do you think was going to come out and perform better than they have thus far?
The Bucks. The Bucks right now are 9-11. I was expecting more. In some ways, it was the same old song. They started out okay early, then Andrew Bogut gets hurt. That's the song. That's the track. The Knicks.
Can I throw something out there to the fellas? Is it official? Can we call Andrew Bogut a bust at this point? Can we call him that?
You know, if he was a top five pick, I'd try to make an argument for him. But he was the top overall pick. So I think, yeah, the bust label is certainly a legitimate argument to have, a legitimate conversation to have at this point.
Yeah, we're in the building on that one. It's like the hook is out, and we're about to pull him off stage. But, yeah, he's got to do something.
Well, call me the Sandman. The brother's a bust. I'm hooking his coat.
Yeah, I think if y'all got the hook, I'm working the level on the trap door. Because this cat is a rap, man. It's a rap. We're going to get him off the stage one way or the other. Because he's going to be the hook of the trap door. Because his brother's a bust. So you got the Bucks. Anybody else you got in your disappointing, in your lineup of disappointing teams? Or players?
Yeah. For me, the New York Knicks, I'm not sure if you guys already covered them.
No.
I'll keep it really short and sweet with them. They have played 21 games. They have only won 7 of them. That's my argument. I rest my case.
You're just going to give us their record, huh?
That's it.
That was my team, the Knicks. And then the disappointing player is Melo in a lot of different ways. I know he's been dealing with some stuff, but, I mean.
What are you dealing with?
I'm not saying dealing with, he's coming up with injury. I'm just thinking, you know, you normally don't have an all-star player like that leave a team. His old team gets better. His new team has not improved, gotten worse. So the Knicks are just, from where they should have been, the way they ended the season last year in terms of you just thought they were going to be on a trajectory. And then getting Chandler, I mean, all that stuff. So they should be playing much better. The Knicks are disappointing. D'Antoni's got to go.
Is D'Antoni's fault?
Because I think part of it is.
I know
the
coach is always the easiest person to get rid of, so I know he's going to go. He's going to go, but it's his fault?
But we already knew what was going on with Amari and Carmelo in terms of dog. We remember the dog meter? We knew that coming in. So the management made that move, but also.
So what was D'Antoni supposed to do?
Well, because first of all, you got to play defense. He don't stress defense.
That ain't D'Antoni though. That ain't never been D'Antoni.
But that's the part about it is you got to figure out how to win. Coaches got to figure out how to put you in a position to win. There's a reason why certain coaches win. If Popovich had them, they'd be winning. Bottom line, we all
if
know
Popovich
that.
If Popovich had Carmelo and Amari, they'd be winning.
He'd figure out they would win it. You know that.
Man, he'd trade one of them dudes.
That or he trained them, but they're going to win. Look, if you look at that roster has got enough talent to win. You know that, and I know that. They're not. You heard the record. They should be playing better than that. There's no reason in the world.
But to win what? But to win what, D? To win what?
They should not. To win what? They can compete in the East. Now, they should be the third best team in the East.
You play to win the game.
That's right. They're terrible. Melo is on the line. Watch out what you wish for, Melo. Watch out. Now you in New York. You're in the hot seat. Now you're thinking, damn, Denver wasn't that bad. Colorado wasn't so bad. Now you in the hot seat.
Me and you and Jeff Thompson, another member of the extended fam, we've gone back and forth. We've gone back and forth on Carmelo and his value as a superstar. And I want to bring in Tim on this because I think one of the core values that Tim talks about is leadership. And I think when you talk about Carmelo Anthony, You know, he got a pass for winning the championship at Syracuse, but he had a very strong personality, a coach guiding him, and the pro game is just different. The players have more power than the coaches because the coaches are easier to get rid of than players are at the pro level. In college, it's a totally different ball game. We all know that. I want to pull Tim in. Tim, give us your assessment of this New York situation, in particular Carmelo and his lack of leadership or his leadership style, if there is one.
It's as if, and I know PhD will appreciate this reference, it's like the Knicks management got together and had an office space moment. You remember the scene where the brother said, I had an idea once.
Yeah.
So jump to conclusions, yeah. Matt. You see, there's these conclusions you can jump to. Why in God's green earth would anybody need to jump to a conclusion on a mat? It's the same thing with the Knicks. Why in the world do you think you're going to all of a sudden get these players who are in their primes to change their stripes? It's a silly idea. Amari Stoudemire and Carmelo Anthony will never be able to, will never exert the commitment and energy it takes to play the defense it takes to be champions, period. And you put them together on a team, it's just as foolish as the jump to conclusions, Matt. It's ridiculous. And then you take Chauncey Billups, a very serviceable point guard. I love Chauncey's game. I think Chauncey is still a great point guard and a shooting guard. He's one of those dual-role guys in my mind. To try to help him pull his stuff together, man, it's just not going to work. These guys, that's not their nature. And so when we have these false expectations of the Knicks, what did my man say? They are who we thought they were.
They are who we thought they were. They are who we thought they were.
Absolutely. That's exactly how I see the Knicks. These guys are not leaders and they're not defenders, both of which it takes to be championship caliber in the National Basketball Association, period. And they're not going to change their stripes, and dreaming up some kind of marketing scheme to have another big three in New York. Because, of course, New York can't be embarrassed by Miami, right? So it's one-upsmanship. If you got your big three, I can get mine. Well, it just doesn't make sense. It's not a good pairing. And so I just never expected them to do better. Because I knew they're not going to be up. And they surely aren't going to lead. Period.
So in that vein of leadership and talking about disappointing teams, I'm going to throw my disappointing team out there. And they started off hot, and they've gotten disappointing of late, and that's the Orlando Magic. I think the expiration date has come on this particular group of guys. They've been together for quite some time. Most of the core pieces have. Dwight wants out. Dwight's leaving. Everybody knows Dwight leaving. And I've always questioned Dwight's ability to lead to begin with, and I put that aside from all of the gripes I have about his game in general. PhD, looking at Orlando, where's this team going? What do you think needs to happen in Orlando for them to get this ship right?
That's a really tough situation because the energy around that team would suggest that they're doing much worse than than they actually are. They actually have a winning record. They'd actually be in the playoffs if they were to start right now. But you just don't feel good about it. I mean, it's kind of like saying, who's your favorite quarterback? Eli Manning. I mean, you don't feel good about that statement. You feel better about saying.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, it's tough to explain. I don't see them heading in the right direction. And there's this, you know, his statements where he came out pretty much saying guys need to play better, don't come out the locker rooms, you're not ready to play in the second half, blah, blah, blah. That's not, you know, Tim talked about transformational leadership. That's not good leadership there. That's not effective leadership, you know. So I just really see this team getting disbanded at some point. I don't think it's the right thing for Orlando to do. honestly, I think it's best for Dwight Howard's situation to just play out this season and hit the free agent market, opposed to getting traded to a team, maybe sign an extension. You know, take a step back and have your recruiting trips like LeBron and D-Wade and Bosh had a couple of summers ago. Just wait it out. Put your head down. Play as hard as you can. I don't see this team getting out the first round. I actually see this team perhaps even missing the playoffs and having a really bad second half of the season.
So this is one of them. Wild speculation was number five on the five on the black hand side. Wild speculation. So we're gonna speculate wildly for a minute. All right, Dwight Howard. Where does he end up?
I would say I have a feeling that all is smoke and mirrors and going back and forth. We hear a lot of reports that there's probably going to be some movement after the All-Star break. I think he ends up – I think somehow they figure out how to either make the deal happen in L.A. or New York. I think one of those two markets, I think when all the smoke screen goes down, all the posturing, I think he's going to end up in that – New York region market, whether it's Jersey, New York, Knicks, or he's going to end up in L.A. region somewhere.
Mr. Tarantine, I know you have a dog in this race. what do you think Dwight Howard ends up?
My heart tells me Los Angeles. My mind tells me to agree with D, that it's got to be a big market, and here's why. Dwight Howard's basketball career, he's got, I think, is going to go down much quicker than we think, just because you spoke to some of the dimensions of the game that aren't, you know, full. He's not going to last as long as we think, but his marketing and him as a brand is just beginning. I mean, Dwight is doing some home run commercials and shows and things, and he's thinking about life after basketball. So if he's a free agent, he's going to have to be in a big market. He's not going to Oklahoma City, right? He's surely not going to Detroit. He's going somewhere where he can sell his brand to the world, and so it's either New York or L.A.
PAZ, what do you think?
I think he might go back home to ATL. Now, if you ask me to put any money on it, I may put a quarter, maybe two, maybe 50 cents at the most. Okay?
You can't put five on that one?
No, I don't feel really strong about it. I actually feel kind of weak. I'm kind of grasping at straws here. But
I'm grasping with you on that one. I'm thinking ATL. His brand gonna be Atlanta Housewives.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not the guy with predictions. I'm the same guy in our preseason football show who picked Sam Bradford to be the MVP. So.
But you also had another prediction that was pretty good, I thought. So, I mean, that was on. So I'm scared of you, because if that happens, I'm like, you must have something. You must have a crystal ball in your closet, under your desk, under your computer. You must be doing something.
Yeah, I got a crystal ball, but, you know, I must be nearsighted, because I either get it all right or all wrong. And
I was going to say, you're the Adam Dunn of predictions, man. You're either hitting homers or you're striking out.
That's right. Atlanta.
Wow.
You know, thinking about it, he came out early this week and said that he'd like to go to Chicago. Chicago has a $15 million bum, I guess, for lack of a better term, on their roster, who I think they'd like to amnesty at the end of the season, or trade at some point. Who has a false hairline. His name is Carlos Boozer. I think you guys have heard of him before.
Wow.
False
hairline.
Look it up.
Wow.
Google it. It'll give you a good laugh. You can get 15 seconds of laughter. I think they could wind up getting rid of Boozer. And if Orlando doesn't make a deal for Dwight and they let and the unfortunate happens for them that this clock runs out and Dwight just becomes a free agent, I think he winds up in Chicago. I think the amnesty boozer free up that money, maybe get rid of one more player, and they bring him on in. The other scenario is they could trade Noah. Now, Noah's not a franchise player by any means. He's not a game-changing player. He's a very good player. He's a very solid player. He's a player that can help a lot of teams in the league. But I think he's gonna find his way to Chicago. That's my hunch. That's me looking into my crystal ball. That's my hunch. I think he finds his way to Chicago. It serves a purpose as a big market. It teams him with a point guard. Wherever he goes, he has to play. He has to be with somebody else. He can't win one by himself. He's tried that in Orlando. As good as he is as the number one big man in the league, again, wake me up when that means something. Being a number one center in the league in 2012 doesn't mean a whole lot. Especially when you're not putting up, 27-14. When you're averaging 19-14, the 14 is great. The 14 is excellent. But just 19 points, are you going against scrubs, 4 out of 5 nights? I don't know about that. So, but I do think I think he winds up in Chicago. But again, that's all wild speculation. But that's what we do with that one. All right. So that was wild speculation. What's that?
Game changer. I just Googled Carlos Buehler. And yes, he did get a hair implant. I thought you were kidding about that.
Hell no. I tell you no lies, my friend.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Google it.
Hold on, man. Hold on now. Y'all can't be talking about this. Oh, my God. Yep.
It's been confirmed.
I am a Blue Devil fan, too. Bro, what you doing?
Embarrassing himself?
But that's what Blue Devils do. That's what they do. That's what Duke players
Uh-oh.
Do.
Oh, see.
I'm going to step back on that one.
See, wait. Hold on.
That's what they do. Carlos Boozers. Softer than wet.
So we talking about Blue Devils, and I'm gonna use that as a segue into the next one, surprising Ooh. Players and teams. And I'm going to throw out a team that's led by a young Blue Devil. He's only Blue Devil for 11 games, but a Blue Devil nonetheless. And that's the Cleveland Cavaliers and Kyrie Irving. That young man is showing his tail off right now. He's playing some great basketball. You talk about leadership. That kid he's cut from that cloth of Zeke and CP3 as far as young point guards go, as far as being leaders.
Yeah, I think he's breathing life into that franchise in that city. Cleveland's happy. I got him in fantasy basketball, so I love him. And I want to stick with the young team before we go to after hours, is Philadelphia. And we can talk about that more in the after hours, but I think Philadelphia, Collins got them playing. They're playing great on defense, one of the top teams defensively, leading their division. I think Philadelphia's been incredible.
Well, all right. We're going to close up the live show, and we're going to go into after hours. Again, we have our guest Tim Tarantine with us. Hopefully he'll be able to hang on with us for you downloaders. You can get some more of his insights as we step into the after hours section of The Real Sports Guys. I'd like to thank the listeners out there for stopping in and hanging out with us for the last 2 hours. Be sure to check in with us next week, 8:30 to 10:30 Central Time. We'll be at the same place as we always are. Bringing the funk, bringing the noise, like we always do about this time. So again, good evening and be well. Fellas, parting shots.
Well, Tim, we'll let you go, Tim. Give us a party shot.
Ain't nothing cooking but the peas in the pot, and the peas wouldn't be cooking if the water wasn't hot. Lead, make impact, have a great week, folks.
All right. For you downloaders out there, welcome to the Real Sports Guys RSG Renegade Radio After Hours section. The team is still in full effect. D. Wills, PhD, and our special guest, Tim Tarantine, is here with us. We're going to keep this rolling for about a half hour. We all got lives and things, so we can't be up to all hours of the night. You know, we all heard the saying, ain't nothing going on at this time of night. Ain't nothing open but hospitals and ladies. So we're going to keep this rolling for another half hour, and then we all going to get rolling. We all married, so we got things to do. All right? We got to keep it rolling. So, fellas, after hours. Right, we were talking about D. Wills. You kind of got into talking about the 76ers. Why don't you keep going with that point? You talked about a young team. The 76ers have compiled a lot of young talent out there. The thing that worries me about that team, as far as the long-term prospects this season, is that they don't have a lead dog. You know, props to Doug Collins for taking a young team and getting them all coordinated and getting them in order, but it'll be interesting to see as they begin to, you know, face some of the more elite teams and we get into the playoffs. How does that team handle those tough late game situations when they have a lot of guys who are good twos and threes, but they don't really have a number one? What do you think about that?
I mean, I agree with that, but I think it's about an evolution of a team. And so I think one of the things that you build in that culture of winning. They don't have a lead dog, but I think they have lead veterans. I think the one person that hasn't evolved the way that he needs to is Evan Turner, obviously, because I think that was who you hope, given where he was drafted, would emerge as the lead dog. And sometimes that's difficult under a Collins coach team for superstars to emerge the way that they need to, because he is demanding about how you emerge and if you can meet up. And the stars who have done it have been great. But I think that's the challenge. I agree with that. But I think I like the way that they're learning how to win, the commitment to defense, how they defend, and the fact they can be interchangeable. And I think that's where Collins, when I talk about coaching, that's where Collins plays a very good role because he'll know how to manage that down the stretch. I think at a certain point they will need to have somebody emerge as that person, and maybe that's going to happen through the draft or some other acquisitions. But I think right now where they're at, I think they have that kind of culture. I mean, as someone who supported Philadelphia for a long time, Sixers fan for a long time, it's good to see them back on the map in a relevant way, in the way that they're constructed.
PhD, surprise team or players?
So I'm going to come out of left field again. My surprise team is the Minnesota Timberwolves. And before you boo me out,
I'm not going to boo you out on that one because I called it.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I'm a little gun shy over here. I've had some bad winners here, as in losers. But the Timberwolves, right now, they are 10 wins, 11 losses. And that may not knock anybody's socks off, but when you look at where they were last year, in a full 82-game season, they only won 17 games. So if you were to project out, if we had already played the normal amount of games that we, you know, typically would in a full season, you know, they would be projecting right around 17 games already halfway throughout the season, if not a few more. So I like what they're doing. They seem to have a team that they may get better as the season goes on. They've got a lot of youth, and I think that's going to be an advantage for them in terms of all these back-to-back type of games or five games and seven nights, what we're seeing right now. I like the way they're bringing along Rubio. Rubio is actually a bit of a better shooter than what I thought. I mean, he almost reminds me of a Jason Kidd where he can make a wide-open shot, and you have to respect his outside game enough, where, you know, he can beat you in a couple different ways. They've got Beasley back, and Beasley and Kevin Love are finding a way to play together. You know, I like all the pieces they have. Wesley Johnson is really stepping up to justify him being a top 10 pick a couple of years ago. So my surprise team will be the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Okay. And Mr. Tarantine, you got a team that's really kind of surprised you thus far early in the season?
Yeah, but it's not because of positive wins. I thought that Gore's taking over ownership of the Detroit Pistons was going to change the culture of the Pistons and kind of move it back to winning ways. I thought they were going to take advantage and Joe Dumars would start to get smarter as we move forward. That has not happened. I went to look for some Detroit tickets the other day, bro. They are trying to sell tickets with Vanilla Ice performing at halftime. And I'm not kidding you. I'm serious. I went to buy a ticket, and on the front page of the Detroit Pistons website was Totally 90s Night, Vanilla Ice performing. Pistons are 4-19. Bro, they are pitiful. They're 3-8 at home and 1-11 on the road. Horrible. They're in a 6-game losing slump. I just really had higher hopes for the Pistons. I thought in a short season with new ownership, who has money, that they would have made more strategic moves, man. I'm just really surprised that the Pistons didn't at least, I mean, middle of the road, you know. I don't expect them to be better than Indiana or Chicago. But, I mean, be neck and neck with Cleveland. Be neck and neck with Milwaukee. Not that Milwaukee's horrible anymore. They're actually stepping the game up. But, I mean, they at least should be in the middle of the road in the Eastern Conference Central. And they just have not, man. They did not take advantage of that change in ownership. And now they're doing gimmicks to sell tickets. Pretty soon they're going to have to pay people to come.
Yeah, that's like back in the day with when they had Kent, when they had Benson and all that back in the day before Zeke, and I mean as Zeke was coming on, I mean they had to do a lot of that stuff back in the day, and I think they invested in Stuckey in a way I've never trusted Stuckey. I mean, this is something we should really track, but the effect of losing a Chauncey Billups, it's just kind of interesting to kind of look at the impact of Chauncey and the different teams that he's left in recent years. But that whole decision and that investment in Stuckey, for a lot of the reasons that Game Changers talked about Westbrook, in a way, that not looking at Stuckey, I don't see him as this guy that could be a lead guard, two guard. I mean, they invest him in a way that I just don't think he produces in leadership. And the only hope for the Pistons is I think Lawrence Frank is a good coach. I think that he'll establish the right mindset. But they're going to have to clean some of those pieces up. They're going to have to, I think with Knight there, I think he's going to add a new element in how he might emerge a little bit. I think they got some pieces there. But it's definitely got to be a change in culture a little bit. I think they just they made some bad investments in players that I just don't understand, like you said. And Joe had it going for a while, other than, and we can question it because of what we said about Carmelo, but, you know, Darko didn't do much. But I think early on he made some good moves to get the team going, but he's had some offers for a while. And I hate to say that because Joe is somebody I love. I'm a Piston
fanatic. That's right.
Yeah, regardless of what you say about Carmelo, he blew that pick.
He blew that pick.
Carmelo is a different player if he goes into that locker room. If he goes into that Pistons locker room with those guys, I think that has a dramatic effect. When you talk about leadership, Tim, I think that has a tremendous effect on the type of player that Carmelo becomes. Instead of going into an environment where he's looked at as the dude from day one. You know, he would have been a marquee guy on that team, but he would have had to earn some stripes. Within that locker room, and he would have to learn how to play some defense.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's no way in any rational person's mind that Stuckey puts on the same pairs of socks that Chauncey Billups does in terms of
defense. Yeah.
No way. Not even that's craziness to me.
Yeah, I don't understand that at all. And what I think what happened was is that Joe fell in love with Stuckey as a young player in the veteran locker room.
Mm-hmm.
And that impact of having those vets around, I think, has Stucky playing at a different level. When you hand him the keys to the Porsche, all of a sudden you get a different. He don't know how to handle it, and he's not that kind of player. He looked like he could develop into that kind of player when he had the supports around him and the leadership around him to help mold that. There's no rudder. You know, when you ain't got no rudder, things don't turn out well. And that's what you see with Stucky. To me, he looked better 2-3 years ago as a ball player, as his prospects for developing into something. He looked a lot better then than he does now. He looks out of place now.
And the Pistons, unfortunately, are a franchise without an identity anymore.
That's
right. They totally lost their identity as a franchise, not just as a team, but as a franchise. Nobody knows what to associate with the Pistons.
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt like after Larry Brown left, and this was, I was radical. I said, you know, they should have had Lambeer. And even because I think Lambeer brought something. I mean, it's back to that. It's back to that that identity. And definitely after Whit left, they should have brought Lambeer in. I just think you need somebody who understands what culture you're trying to build on. And I think they've lost. I think Lawrence Frank is getting them back to that. I think he's the type of coach who can get back to that. But yeah, they got a lot to right the ship. And when you make bad decisions in the NBA, it just takes so long to recover if you don't make some of the right moves. So you can just be, you can easily be the Clippers, the old Clippers, not the new Clippers.
I want to go back to Phil talking about the Timberwolves and the turnaround that they've had, which again I think is notable. Kevin Love. Here's the question. Where do you put him as far as the top power forwards in the NBA right now? Where are you putting Kevin Love?
Ooh. Oh, that's a good one. Well, that's a good one. I would put he gotta be at one or two. I like where Aldridge is going. But I don't know. I'll put Love at number two.
Number two, behind Dirk.
Yeah, I would say put behind Dirk. But I think because Dirk is one of those things like it's like when you are trying to make your case for the Oscars or something like that. Sometimes you got to wait to get it. I think his production is better than Dirk on both ends of the floor. But, you know, Dirk, you might get that nod just on what he just did last year. I mean, he's playing well, but I think Love is on both ends of the court. I'm giving Dirk that just on the fact that he's got history on his side. Next year, I think if Love keeps playing, Love moves to number one.
Okay. PhD, that was your guy. What do you think Love is as far as marquee power forwards in the game?
I think he's a top power forward in the game right now. When you look at how he's influencing the game, offensively, you can stretch the defense out to the three-point line. Rebounding-wise, he's clearly the best rebounder in the NBA right now, if not a top two or three rebounder. And athletically, he's improved so much. He dropped, I don't know how much it was, 15, 20 pounds. But when you watch him, he's playing the pick and roll so much better, which was a weakness for him last year in terms of defensively. Offensively, he's playing the pick and roll game so much better. I think when you consider what he has around him and defenses can pretty much stack up, try to stop him, and he's still putting up 20, 25 per night, and then bringing that with 15 rebounds, he's clearly the best power forward in the league right now.
So what's next for Minnesota? Because they have some pieces. They got Rubio, who seems like he has the potential to be a pretty good point guard in the NBA. He's a decent, he's a solid point guard right now, averaging almost 9 assists a game, shooting it from 3 better than many people thought he could, about 11 points, 5 rebounds. That's not bad for a first season in the league at 21.
Right.
So he has a pretty good ceiling. What's next? You know, they're trying to use that OKC model as far as building young and taking the young talent and developing. They got their power forward. They got a point guard. What's the next piece? What's the next shoe that needs to drop in Minnesota? What do they need to add to this mix to kind of take that next step?
I think they're faced with a tough decision. Do you continue to build on what you have and take the risk of bringing in a veteran or making a move to mess up the chemistry that is starting to look stronger and stronger game by game? Or do you make a splash and bring in a solidifying type of player, a couple of veterans or a key veteran that you bring in? Because they have a lot of attractive pieces. They have 2 or 3 players that they could probably move on and get a vet back in return, and this team would not lose much. But at the same time, we've seen so much with the NBA that it's about chemistry. It's about guys enjoying to play with each other and getting to know how to play with one another. So I think that's a delicate balance. If you ask me, I think they stick it out. I don't think they were projected to make the playoffs right now. Right now they're an 11 seed. They're about 2.5 games out for that 8th spot. If you make a push and make the playoffs, you know, that last week or two going into the season, great. But if not, don't get off path because, you know, I think if leadership with the Minnesota Timberwolves would have, you know, been given a genie and said, listen, you guys are going to be a top 10 seed next season. You may not make the playoffs, but you're going to be a top 10 seed. Will you take that? Absolutely they would. So I think they need to show some patience with this young team they have.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think they got a really good, if you look at their roster, they got a really good mix of veterans. And, you know, early on when we were doing our predictions, and I said we were talking about who's going to make the playoffs and we're doing it, I talked about Minnesota, and we said the reasons why. And I started with the coaches. Then I said Adam, and I went down to the assistant coaches. Remember where I was talking about that? And part of it is because I think they got a good mix of veterans, but I also think they got the right kind of coaching staff to bring this group. I think part of the league, part of the NBA has got to be about learning how to win. How do you build this stuff? You know, maybe there's some pieces you made, but look at you got a vet like Brad Miller, good guy to bring into the rotation, solid, rugged, gonna bang a little bit, gonna get there. You got Barea, who is a spark off the bench, but tough, gonna bring some vet, been around. You know, then you got the Wesley Johnsons. You got cats like that who can bring some energy and can do some things. You got some youth. You got the Derek Williams. So I think they got a nice. You got Luke Ridenhour. So you got some good mixes. I think it's just I think you hit it, Phil, about the learning the chemistry. And sometimes you got to be patient and let it cook a little bit. This sounds like something Tim might say. You got to let it cook. I ain't even catching it the right way. You got to let it cook and simmer like a good stew. And I think that's part of building the organization in a winning organization is you got it. Sometimes you can't overdo it. You got to let it cook and let it marinate a little bit. And so I think that when I look at their roster, I like the mix of youth and veterans, you know, that they have. But they got to build the chemistry. They got to learn how to win on the road. They got to do all those things. And they will go as Rubio goes. Again, Rubio sets the dinner plate. And as he continues to learn how to get people involved in places there and develops and grows defensively, their team will get better. And so I really like this team a lot. The question is how patient they can be as a manager to let these people mature. Okay.
Last time Tim was on, last summer, the Miami Heat was the most provocative subject out there, period. And so Tim Tarantine came on, and we were talking about the Heat. What were they missing? Tim mentioned that they had the main course, but they were missing the Lowry seasoning. They didn't have
that was a classic.
Tim, what do you think about the Miami Heat right now?
Well, brother, I'll put it to you this way. The Heat still haven't got their Lowrys. And I think that's because they're still too concerned about what everybody else thinks of them. The players, to me, now this is just a human dynamic now. This is not statistics. This is not numbers. You all agree with me. Feel free to disagree, agree. But it seems like they still feel as if they have something to prove. These guys are all accomplished in their own right. And if they just play, they don't have to keep using Mrs. Dash and No Salt and all these other seasonings to try to keep people, you know, feeling a certain kind of way about the health of their team. You're great players. You enjoy one another. Just play ball. Stop playing to the cameras. Stop playing to Twitter. Their focus as basketball players is so diverted into this whole thing called the Big Three. They still ain't got it, man. They still have not reached a point of maturity in terms of being able to move past things, man. They get stuck on stupid, and I think the media, obviously, you know, that place over there in Bristol keeps a lot of stuff going. But they keep a lot of stuff going themselves if they just get off Twitter and play basketball. I don't know. You guys disagree if you feel like, but I just don't feel like they're focused on being a team. They're focused on showing everybody else that they don't suck. And those are two totally different things.
Well, and I think, you know, and y'all appreciate this, I think that they have an external locus of control. Things happen to them, and because they believe the external environment impacts it rather than they control it internally. And I think that Tim is hitting right on that they're constantly believing that their destiny is determined by those things external to them. Rather than the great teams have an internal locus of control, and they are driven. That's what makes Kobe different. That Kobe doesn't leave anything in the external environment. When we talk about the Kobe system, this is about greatness. It feeds from within in a way that you see no limits. And they're constantly identifying the limits, acknowledging the limits, trying to defend the possible limits, and rather than really being controlled from within and believing that whatever it is in front of them, they can win. That's the difference between Jordan and Kobe and CP3, as y'all been arguing about where he is, then I think is LeBron.
That's right.
And I wouldn't say Dwayne, because I think Dwayne had that, but I think it's the group think that's coming there. I think that's LeBron and Bosch, and I think Dwayne has kind of bought into it in a way that he didn't buy into it before. And so that's disappointing because I was hoping that he would be the one leading around this. So I've always thought about that. It's an external locus of control. That's how they operate, and they can't figure out how to do anything about that.
And Dwayne feels like he has to continually come to these cats rescue instead of leading. So again, I talked about it at the beginning of the show, man. You got to play offense. And the Heat are constantly in a defensive stance to everything outside of the 12 or 15 guys on the squad, period. And that's what makes Phil Jackson so great as a coach. He always was able, with the superstars or not, you can argue who he had to work with, et cetera, but he got those players to focus on what was going on internally. Michael had the gambling problems. His numbers went up. Kobe screwed that woman out in Colorado. His numbers went up. He took a guy like Dennis Rodman, who couldn't focus anytime a butterfly would fly past. And he had Dennis laser focused on championships, man. There's something special about that next level of elite champion that Dwayne lost upon LeBron and Bosch's arrival.
Yep. I agree wholeheartedly. I was a strong defender of D-Wade. You know, I felt that at times in that year before LeBron and Chris Bosh showed up, that there were during that playoff series where the Heat went up against the Celtics and D-Wade tried to single-handedly will that team to a victory against a really, really tough Boston Celtics team. I said at that moment he was playing like the best player in the league. Hands down, bar none, including LeBron, including Kobe. At that time, D-Wade was playing the best basketball in the league. He was playing with a glorified D-League team, and he took an elite team to as far as he could take his team against an elite team. But I agree. I think he bit off more than he could chew with those two, man. And with LeBron, you know, you hope that he, because he's such a phenomenal talent, you hope that he can turn it around, and you hope that he can grasp and hone whatever it is that he needs to hone so that he can be the dominant force that he truly is. But none of that, I mean, you know, I was just reading an article on Grantland.com, Bill Simmons' website, talking, and it mentioned that LeBron is having one of the greatest statistical seasons ever. Shooting 55% in the field, averaging 29 points a game, 8 rebounds, 7 assists. Just a phenomenal season statistically. But none of that matters because at the end of the day, LeBron has to win when it matters most. He has to be present when it matters most. And that's the fourth quarter of a playoff finals. That's the only way LeBron can shed this image of not being mentally tough. That's the only way. I don't care how many fourth quarter games he wins during the regular season. If he doesn't show up in a game 6, in a game 7, in a closeout game, in the finals, it doesn't matter at this point. And same for Bob. You know, and you know, he still may be the best third wheel in the league, but he's still a third wheel nonetheless. And I agree. I think they still have a lot of work to do. They have a better supporting cast in place. Battier helps out a lot. He can provide a little bit of leadership. North Cole seems like he's got a future in the league. Mario Chalmers is a solid point guard. And hopefully Mike Miller-Stoms is all right.
How you hold your thumbs like that? I'm trying to honestly. Miller has some of the craziest injuries all the time. I've never seen, but like, that's like the kids you always play on your team. He's always had these weird injuries. He got hurt. You're like, what are you doing? Are you playing with weird toys at home? You know, like how you get that in?
Wow.
Wow. What are you doing?
Weird
toys. Yeah. I'm not saying, you know, whatever that might be, what's going on? Miller has always got something going on. I've never seen him like that. Mm-hmm. Walk past the beach and hurt himself. I don't know what's happening over there. But I thought Battier was one of the key pickups, but he only works if they listen. So if you can appreciate a veteran giving you an ear and helping you think through, I think he can be an effective person for their team if you take that in that way. Like some of the other great players have always done. I mean, when you think about even some of the people who have impacted Jordan who are veterans on some of his teams, or you know, or Kobe and D. Fish. I mean, there's a point someone they build trust with who's not in that star limelight, and I haven't seen LeBron quite do that enough. I've seen Wade get influenced in some ways like that, but I haven't seen LeBron get influenced by folks who weren't stars.
Yeah, Wade needs to take more of a big brother approach, and right now he's operating with LeBron and Bosh as if he's their contemporary. And he is to an extent, but he has to carry himself as if, you know, because he's the only one in there in that locker room with some jewelry. And he has to carry that cachet with those other two guys. Like, look, I'm going to show you the way. I'm going to show you how to get this done. I'm going to show you how to get through it. You just need to follow my lead. And, you know, I think that burden is more than even he can handle at this point. So we're at the top of the hour. It's closing time. So I'm allow each of the fellas to again send out a parting shot, and we're gonna wrap this one up. So I'll pass it to PhD first. We'll go D Wills, and then Mr. Tarantine. You can close out the show. Here we go.
I want to thank everybody that listened. I appreciate the downloaders that are listening now. Thanks, Mr. Tarantine. Really appreciate you coming on. Already getting positive feedback from the listeners. My dog of the week is Keyshawn Johnson. I'm going to tell a brief story. Keyshawn Johnson is on TV with the crew, his normal crew, Berman, Jackson, and they're watching the Patriots walking to the stadium as a going-away parade, getting ready to get on the flight to go to Indianapolis. And so Tom Brady's walking out, and he's, you know, dressed to the nines as he normally does, but shoulder to shoulder to him is Wes Welker. And Wes Welker has on a powder blue jacket and red pants, Patriot colors, okay? And Berman, Chris Berman, Mr. Berman, all 60 years of him, says, I like Wes Welker's outfit. He's got the team spirit. And Keyshawn Johnson steps in and says, no, he does, Boone. No, he doesn't. That looks horrible. That's why they have uniforms. So I appreciate Keyshawn Johnson's fashion sense. You know, Boomer's trying to get morale up, and Keyshawn's just shaking his head. Why would you wear red pants anywhere? So Keyshawn Johnson is my dog of the week.
Oh, man. Love it, love it, love it, love it. D. Wills.
First of all, I want to thank again young Justin. Hopefully you listening to this on the download for coming in, on the download, not download, for coming in and talking about, Iverson at the top five. You held your own, but we did have to give you the Mutombo finger, but we appreciate that. I was going to make you the dog of the week, but after late last night, I got in my bed. I had, I've been working all day because that's what real sports guys do. We just getting stuff, That's why we got people like Tim Tarantine on. We in the stuff. We're doing things, and so sometimes we can't catch the game until late at night. We might have T-voted after family go to bed or whatever we're doing, DVR, all that stuff. And I turn on, I'm watching NBA TV, and I see something I've never seen before. I see Perkins looking crazy after he got crushed by an anvil. And I can't say nothing but Blake Griffin is my dog of the week. People talk about him throwing it in the rim, but the look on his face, on Perkins'
I'm sorry to interrupt your closing, D. Wills, but I got to say this to all those people that have a problem with Blake Griffin throwing it in the rim. You obviously ain't never dunked a damn basketball before. All right, you know how you got to get up in here to throw it in the rim?
I mean, the way he cocked it back, I've never seen anything like it. I immediately text the fellas as if it was just a natural reflex. Like, you know how the doctor hits you on the knee and you almost kick it? That's how my reflex was on the dunk. And so, Blake, I don't care what you ever do. I love you. You've been a great addition to the NBA, and I love the expression. There is no expression. But the only thing I can say is you are my dog of the week, man.
That was an unbelievable play. Mr. Chance, how you take it?
Man, I'm kind of upset because you took my dog of the week. Blake Griffin is the greatest man to dunk a basketball without dunking a basketball. He is the baddest man to get off the ground. I mean, and here's the point with Blake for me, what makes him a real dog, is that he rarely does it in open spaces. His most spectacular dunks are with his testicular region right around the medulla oblongata. He dropped it in real smooth. When you teabag, no pun intended, a person's neck consistently, you're a bad man. That's my dog of the week. I got to say this to the people. Listen, folks, we spend our lives, our entire lives, playing it safe, only to find out that it's the riskiest play of all. Go after whatever you're going to do with all your heart, all your mind. Take a risk and lead. This world is requiring big-time things from real people like the real sports guys. I love what you guys are doing. Thanks for having me on, man.
Yeah, we're grateful. Thank you.
Absolutely. You know, as I said before, we truly appreciate your presence, and you are welcome to come back anytime. You are extended RSG fam, so there's always an open invite for you to come on and spend ample time with us. As long as you got time, we got time. You know, you get a strong salute from me. I'm sure the rest of the three-man booth give you that same salute. My dog of the week is Kendrick Perkins' strength, because he's going to need one after that baptism that he got by Blake. Perk was mad. You know he got them forehead wrinkles. I think Blake gave him another one.
He's going to cry in the car.
Oh, man. Yes, he is going to cry in the car. You know, we were talking off air about, you know, when you're in a situation like that and you're one of his teammates, how do you respond? Because you want to jump out your chair, because that's just your natural instinct, but you can't. And I was telling the fellas, what you kind of do, you kind of same thing, you just kind of winch real hard. Look at your point, you kind of winch real hard, like, I wish it wasn't you. So that's all we got for this week, ladies and gentlemen. Again, we appreciate our guest, Tim Tarantine. Check out his blog on WordPress. You want to plug that one more time, Tim?
Yeah, timtarantine.wordpress.com.
All right. Again, be checking us out on Facebook, on Twitter. Real Sports Guys, RSG Renegade Radio, signing off. Take care, be blessed, be well.